back to recording. And then to pause.
Sorry for the delay. That we started late. I'm sure all of the majority of us were here on time. We just delayed this by this tea. We'll take it up. I think we're meeting for the first time. We need to introduce ourselves. I'm Tumsani Kamete, chairing this Committee of Trade and International Relations. It has got tourism with it. Then we'll introduce ourselves. I come from KwaZulu-Natal, because this is the NSOP. We have the interests of the provinces. That is why we invited Western Cape and another province in Mpumalanga. We'll be taking the provinces one by one. We'll introduce ourselves from my left, right, round, all of us. And I'll ask people that are sitting behind us to come a little bit forward so that they can be seen, so that you can see them. We don't want to be seen and we don't see the people. Because that's
good morning, Chairperson and colleagues. My name is Freddie Adams. I am representative of the Western Cape in the National Council of Provinces, and I represent the ANC as a member of the African National Congress.
Dumela modula stilo le bitso la ga ke nna Colin Maine ke tla go province ya Bokone Bophirima.
That's the network for interpretation.
Kenneth Sinclair, Northern Cape.
Morning, Sherry Chen from Harte.
Morning, Elsa van Lingen, Eastern Cape.
Good morning, Zara Bihale, Limpopo Province.
Morning, Jomo Nyambi, Mpumalanga Province.
When you have received your...
Edwin Conroy, I'm a researcher to the Chief Whip of the NCOP.
No, Colin, I come from the Department of Economic Development and Tourism.
Lizzie Matopa, I come from the Department of Economic Development and Tourism.
Dave Frampton from Cape Town Retail Limited, which is the Western Cape and Cape Town Tourism Authority.
Laureen Platsky, I'm the Western Cape Coordinator for 2010, and I'm in the Department of the Premier in the Western Cape.
I'm Joyce Padanka from Mpumalanga, Department of Economic Development.
Joyce from Department of Economic Development and Tourism, Mpumalanga.
I'm Temingosi Ngoma, Committee Secretary for the Aero Committee on Public Protector, currently standing in for Mr. Lupega, standing on my right hand side to the Committee Secretary for this committee.
I want to ask people sitting behind us to introduce themselves. They've defied an order to come this side, and it will be difficult for us to introduce people that we do not see. If they really do intend to be part of this meeting, they should come this way and introduce themselves, please. You included. Just come over this side, please, so that they can see you. Then you can start introducing yourselves.
I'm Jason Bond from the Cape Town.
Thanks. That was nice and sweet. We now know everybody. I think your tape recorder that I had all those names. I will start with what we have. Western Cape. We always have a problem when we call in departments or what have you. So we'll take it upon ourselves to read the brief. That on the agenda it should be the briefing by the Department of Economic Development and Tourism, Western Cape Provincial Administration, Department of Economic Development and Environment and Tourism, Mpumalanga Provincial Government, on their provincial strategic plans and readiness for the 2010. So that's the brief. You give us your strategic plans. You can have a small introduction, but we don't want more information that is not on the strategic plan. Precisely the strategic plans that we want to know, and then when you come to readiness for 2010, whoever will do that, they will then do that. I saw on the other presentation that we got that there's too much reference also on global issues of the continent. I don't think that's too much, you know, part of the strategy. If we could concentrate, we could just give an introduction on tourism generally and then concentrate, otherwise it will eat our time as provincial delegates. But I'm happy that there are people from economic development, because there's a chairperson here, Honorable Freddie Adams, from economic development. So he'll be watching and listening. So it's the truth issues, tourism and economic development, he'll be watching. So I'll first give to the Western Cape. They will lead and they will tell us how they're going to do it.
Thank you, Chair. We from the department, and we have our marketing agency, which is Cape Town Roots Unlimited. So I will start this. I think we can just go through the our strategy for as a province in terms of tourism. Then I'll hand over to Dave to talk on the marketing part of it, if that's acceptable, Chair.
Now your presentation will be as what?
The presentation will focus more on how tourism is structured within the Western Cape and the model that we use in terms of tourism development, because we are more on the side of development, and then the marketing part of it has been outsourced to Cape Town Roots Unlimited, which is handling the marketing. And Dave will take us through that. And
so as Western Cape Department of Economic Development,
yes,
and Tourism,
yes,
that's fine.
Okay. As we had indicated, I think that the presentation takes us a bit from national, but I'm going to skip all those pages and focus on the main issue for the day. So this is a document that we're working on. The first few pages are focusing more on global trends and the tourism arrival figures, and then and how tourism is structured from national, provincial, and local, but I'm not going to go into that into detail. And I will just focus more on our tourism framework as what we do within the Western Cape. And that is on slide number 10 on page 5. Okay, we within the Western Cape tourism, we are structured. We have what we call the Western Cape Tourism Development Framework, which is a 10-year framework that we're working on. And this framework was launched 2 years ago, and it is a detailed program on tourism development for the program for the province. And it's within that framework we work through four social partners, which is labor, civil society, business, and government, of course. So out of the framework, we have what we call the Western Cape Tourism Development Partnership, which comprises all the four partner, social partners. So everything that we do within the province is done through the partnership. And the four partnerships are grouped into four subcommittees. We have what we call the Growth Subcommittee, the Partnership Subcommittee, and the HRD subcommittee. And in all the three subcommittees, you have representatives from labor, of course, civil society, business and government. The partnership, all the projects that we do within the province, within the partnership, all the projects that we do within the department are done through the partnership. Like the HRD subcommittee, what they have done is they came up with the HRD framework for the province. And within that subcommittee, we've managed to get the Western Cape Provincial Education Department being part of the partnership. We have CETA, which was something that we couldn't get, being part of the partnership. We also have the higher education institutions and further education training colleges, all forming part. So the HRD framework that we have, or strategy that we have, was a culmination of discussions from the subcommittee HRD with all the social partners being part of that subcommittee. And all the projects that we do are all structured in that way. And the partnership meets every second month. All the subcommittees, they meet every second month to go through the projects and the representations and make input into the strategy and projects that we work with. And every once a quarter, we have a plenary which is chaired by the minister. And in that plenary, that's where all the subcommittees come to present to the minister, and the discussions and inputs and discussions and inputs are discussed in that forum. If we go to slide number 15, the Western Cape Chosen Framework. The framework comprises, like I said, within the framework, then we have tourism growth. Then tourism growth, what we do, I think that's one thing that we've managed to succeed in, that we had realized that implementation of projects, especially at local level, because the mandate of the local municipalities is to develop tourism, but we've always encountered problems in terms of tourism development at local level. And through the partnership, we are succeeding in terms of getting local municipalities to be more involved in issues of tourism development and economic empowerment. And the one example that we could give is the development of the Agalas, or the Southernmost Chiefs, that we're currently working on, where we encountered problems with EIAs and everything, you know, like consultations with communities. But through the partnership, we've managed to engage local municipalities and engage with the mayors and the local communities. And because discussions are now involving them, then we've seen that there's a lot of progress taking place within the part of the development that project that we're working on. And the other part that we also, the other main area that we focus on is tourism global competitiveness. Within the tourism global competitiveness, that's where we're looking at issues of quality assurance and tourism safety support program. Quality assurance is all about ensuring that the projects that, or the products that we have are of global competitiveness. They are of standard that is acceptable to the international tourists. And it's all about issues of grading. We do issue major icon inspections and inspections of your hotels and your other tourism infrastructure. And the tourism safety and support group has two aspects to it. The one aspect of it is the tourism proactive program. The proactive program, that's where we work with the police, we work with accommodation establishments, distributing information on tourism safety within the province, and ensuring that we create a conducive environment for tourists. Whereas then the other program is the reactive program. The tourist reactive program, that's where we assist tourists who are in distress. Like if a tourist has been mugged, or there's been an accident where tourists are injured or whatever, all those tourists who are in distress, then the program, that's where we come in as a department to assist tourists who are in distress, so as to ensure that they feel a bit better in terms of what has happened to them. So those are the two programs that fall within the tourism global competitiveness subcommittee that we have. And the other one is tourism and enterprise development and the tourism skills development, to which I'll ask my other colleague Knox to just take you through on what happens within the tourism enterprise development and the tourism skills development.
Okay, one of the key focus areas of tourism within the province is looking at increasing participation of historically disadvantaged people. trying to get them involved in tourism. And one of the ways of increasing participation in tourism is around enterprise development. We have a program that has been established about 4 or 5 years ago, where we use what we call tourism help desk agents to go out into the different communities and create awareness about tourism opportunities and how people can start businesses in tourism. And the Tourism Enterprise Development Program is looking at the tiers or the levels of enterprise development, where you look at people that want to start up businesses and to give them information on how they can start up businesses. And the next level is therefore would look at people that are already running businesses but perhaps need more information on how to market their businesses, on how to sustain their businesses. And then you have training programs that are targeted at those people in terms of how they can grow their businesses, market their businesses. And also the last tier is the mentorship program. And here we would therefore look at people that have been running their businesses for maybe more than 3 years or so, and you then pair that person with a mentor. A mentor who runs a similar business. So if, for instance, somebody runs a B&B in Khayelitsha, for instance, and they want to grow their B&B, but have been, you know, struggling for a while in terms of certain elements of their business, and would then identify a mentor that runs a similar business, and that mentor would, like, assist that small business person in terms of growing their business, in terms of marketing their business, and the mentorship would last for 8 months, and so that would be, yeah, so that would be then the last level of the program. So the Tourism Enterprise Development Program is implemented in all the 6 regions in the province. And on a quarterly basis, we then have like sessions where we bring the businesses at those different levels, and where we look at where are the challenges, where are the successes, and how we can improve, you know, our programs further, depending on the feedback that we get from the different enterprises or from the different small businesses. Also, part of the assistance that we give to the entrepreneurs is them accessing, you know, services that the Red Door Initiative also provides. Not sure whether you're familiar with the Red Door. Our department also has got an enterprise program that looks at not only tourism-specific businesses, but businesses in the other sectors, and they have what we call them Red Doors in the communities. So you would find that the Red Door offers even more services than what we would offer in tourism. They have they have voucher programs. If an enterprise wants to, I just want to give an example. If they want to do renovations, for instance, in their business, and the Red Door program has got vouchers that they can access on. And it's funding that they can use towards towards doing renovations on their business. So we link them up with the Red Door. We also link them up with other funding institutions like your CEDARS, where they can get more funding, because our program does not give funding at all. We give support in terms of training, in terms of business advice, but when it comes to funding, we would therefore be able to send them to Umsobomvu Youth Fund and the other funding agencies that are available. So that's the enterprise development program. Also now, recently, the tourism codes have been gazetted into law. So one of our responsibilities as the department is to ensure that the businesses are aware of tourism, the gazetting of the codes, and what are the implications. So we've been conducting workshops with the tourism stakeholders on their understanding of BBBE, and also to encourage more businesses to be compliant in terms of tourism BBBE. BBBE meaning the broad-based black economic empowerment. Sorry about that. BBBE, thank you. Also, we have a program around social tourism. I think we all know that a lot of our people are not very exposed to tourism, and therefore we also want to increase their participation in terms of working with the different communities in the province to ensure that they are aware about tourism, and also to look at how they can get involved in tourism, whether and through enterprise development or through skills development programs that we have. So we run programs called the Access the Cape. Access the Cape is about bringing tourism closer to people, where we would take different stakeholders in the communities on excursions. And like, for instance, we'd take them to Table Mountain, and they would become tourists in their own areas and experience being a tourist. And also we hope that in that way they would be more aware about tourism and also understand what opportunities are available in tourism, and maybe be more friendlier, you know, to tourists, because they understand what a tourist goes through. We also work closely with the schools. We have a tourism schools competition that we run, especially with schools that offer tourism as a subject. And then around regulation, with the department registers tourist guides. It's legislated in terms of the National Tourism Second Amendment Act, and there's a program also around training and development of tourist guides and registration of tourist guides. And then lastly, the skills development program looks at skilling human resources within tourism, and our approach is two-pronged. It's about bringing new entrants into tourism, where we offer, like for instance, bursaries for students that want to study either at a FET college or at a university. And so we partner with the different universities and have those bursaries available to students that want to study tourism. And also, so bringing new entrants is one approach. The other approach is looking at existing employees in terms of upskilling them. And we would have programs around learnerships and internships for the current workforce that is already working in tourism. As Lizzie said, all the skills interventions that we have in the department around tourism are based on the human resource development strategy that was developed by one of the subcommittees that deals with HRD.
Maybe just to conclude, the one thing that we started in December was the realignment of the Tourism Chief Directorate. And that, in that we brought in the culture and film and music into tourism. So the whole issue for the commercialization of the cultural aspects of music and arts and performing arts. So the six sectors that join tourism now is film, music, visual arts, performing arts and crafts, and the six. But those are what we're doing now is, in terms of growth, we'll be looking at growth of tourism across the six sectors. Or six is tourism, the sixth one is tourism, the other ones are five, and then of course with tourism, then it makes it the sixth one. So what we'll be doing in terms of growth, when you talk about tourism growth, we'll be looking at growth across the six sectors. When you look at tourism, what North and them will be doing in their directorate, that will be done across the six sectors of arts, film, music, performing arts and visual arts, of course, tourism as part of that. So that is we're still working on a model on how that is going to look like, but now we have them as part of the chief directorate, which is now tourism, arts and entertainment. Because we haven't done much research, but we read that the whole issue of creative tourism is becoming a popular thing in other countries, and now your tourists also want to get more involved when they travel. It's not just about sitting and, you know, just relaxing at the beaches and having fun, but they also want to get more involved with what's happening within the communities as part of creative tourism. So we still have to work out on a position paper on that in terms of how the province is going to approach that. Okay, I think we tried to cover almost everything in terms of what we do as a department, and I don't know if maybe we have to hand over to Mr. Dave to take us through the marketing part of it, or he just wants us to stop here.
Let's continue.
Thank you, Chair. I'm mindful of what you said in terms of sticking to the brief. So what we've done is basically prepared this presentation around the strategy of the organization, but I've illustrated it with certain examples so you can see how it actually works and what we actually do. It looks very thick, but it goes very quickly. So let me proceed. Okay, it's basically the tourism marketing strategy for the period 2009 to 2014. That's the mission, vision, and core values of the organization. Obviously, from a mission point of view, we want to market the Western Cape as a desirable tourism destination to as many potential leisure, business, and events visitors as possible. And those three there, leisure, business, and events, in terms of integration of the tourism approach, is critical from a tourism marketing point of view. Then just some of the key drivers and situations in terms of the marketing strategy at the moment. We're obviously sitting with significant budgetary challenges, which is an issue which is peculiar to our province and city in terms of the withdrawal of the city's funding, and much of the activities that we have been doing are basically scaled back or we're not doing. So it is a problem. So I'm just bringing that to the committee's attention. The organizational capacities of CTRU obviously have an influence. The approach of the city and the province, as I mentioned there. Then from a global perspective, looking at macro issues like climate change, high fossil fuel prices, the economic slowdown, expectations around the World Cup, and of course the macro and micro situation from a South African perspective. That's the structure of our board. I won't go into that. And the executive management of the organization. The strategic marketing goals of the organization, and I've spoken already about the leisure, events, and business tourism perspective, and that's basically marketing the destination, focusing on those three sectors, to contribute to the distribution of benefits of a thriving tourism industry to the citizens of the province, and obviously to do this in an environmentally and socially responsible fashion. And the alignment with our organization with the departmental goals is basically to grow and share the economy. Tourism is an incredibly important sector within the Western Cape, and therefore the role of tourism in terms of growing the economy is critical. Some of the strategic objectives, I've already mentioned those. So the particular focus areas are around the Conventions Bureau, business tourism, the MICE sector, meetings and centres, conventions and exhibitions. It's a sector which has grown enormously in the Western Cape in the last 5 to 6 years, and is making a huge impact, particularly in terms of addressing lull periods during the year, such as June, July, August, even the first 2 weeks in December, which are traditionally quite a low period from a tourism point of view. And then obviously working with the leisure tourism marketing area, where obviously our destination is very strong, but there's so much potential out there in terms of what we can be doing. Our target markets, and this is quite an interesting slide, and what I've done is indicated the 2010 markets in red italics, and you can see that practically all the markets that we engage with are 2010 markets. Namibia, from a Western Cape perspective, is a very important African market for us because most travel from Namibia comes down through the Northern Cape into the Western Cape, with Cape Town as the end destination. I mean, you'll see the figures now in terms of the numbers arriving. USA is critical. They travel during our low season, July, August, September. So from an economic perspective, very, very important in terms of addressing that market. And our core markets in Europe, the UK, Germany, Netherlands, and France. Then the emerging strategic markets that we're looking at, Kenya, Nigeria, and the Gulf States. The Gulf States more as a hub for travel. because so many of the big airlines such as Emirates, Etihad, etc., have global networks which are marketed through the Gulf. People travel from the Gulf. It's a very important market for us to address. There's also a substantial expat community in the Gulf. So you can't see them arriving as citizens of Bahrain or Qatar or whatever, but they are resident and in the Gulf area. So that's an important area of focus. And Nigeria is very important for us because of the value, particularly of the business tourism and commercial tourism potential of that market. Brazil, around the World Cup, is a critical market for us. And it's a market of immense opportunity because the numbers are limited in terms of who travel to our destination. And the whole idea, of course, with the World Cup is to leverage the focus that the World Cup will have in those markets to stimulate a sustainable tourism industry beyond 2010. And that's where markets like Argentina and Brazil are very important. In Asia, India, Australia, China, and Japan are important. India and China particularly in terms of their potential and also in terms of their yield are very critical markets. The numbers are quite low at the moment, but we're certainly investing a lot of effort in terms of marketing the destination there. And then the other slightly below the radar markets in Europe, Scandinavia, Italy, Belgium, Switzerland, and Ireland, we get good performance from those markets, obviously room for growth. The other watch list markets that we're looking at, Mozambique and Angola, the numbers are increasing. What is interesting is although the numbers from Angola are small, it's the highest yield market that travels to South Africa in terms of spend. That's quite important for us, and we would, of course, love to see South African Airways putting on a direct flight between Luanda and Cape Town instead of Luanda to Joburg, or both, or probably both. Otherwise, I'm going to get into trouble from the lady from Gauteng. Then just in terms of performance out of those markets, and you can see the global economic impact has been particularly strong in the UK and Germany if you compare 07's figures to 08's figures. But what is interesting is that despite that, and the economic downturn happened halfway through 2008, numbers out of most of the other markets, including the USA, have in fact grown. So the potential for growth exists. The recession was felt very strongly in UK and Germany, and one of the big issues, particularly in the German market, was around the issue of the xenophobic violence that occurred last year, because it was reported in the media there that foreigners were being attacked, and they're not discriminating between whether they're African foreigners or European foreigners. It was foreigners, and they just didn't want to come. And there's been a huge effort put into that market with us working together with South African Tourism in Germany to actually reverse that perception. So an incident like that can have an enormous effect. You've got the 2010 World Cup coming up. You've got all the good feeling around that. When you have an incident like that, it can wipe out all the efforts that are made. And then just in terms of destination performance, in terms of arrivals, you can see that dip in numbers between 07 and 08, and that's driven mainly by our core market decline. Domestic trips were also slightly down. What is interesting is that the spend was slightly up, and the foreign direct spend was also up. And I personally think that might be an anomaly in the figures. But we are given the assurance that this is the correct reflection of what's happened. Then just in terms of unpacking the marketing strategy slightly, the Convention Bureau is very active in terms of bringing big conferences to Cape Town. And as a global meetings destination, Cape Town improved its ranking from 37 to 35. To put a bit of context to that, Johannesburg is ranked at 126. And Durban is ranked at 128. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done in those other provinces in terms of making business tourism work for them. They've certainly got the infrastructure in terms of the convention centres, etc., but there's probably a shortfall from a marketing perspective. What's also important is to note is that the Convention Bureau with us is the only fully constituted convention bureau in South Africa. And it provides all the services that are required in order to entice the business to our destination. And if you look at the spend of your average conference delegate, because you don't bank numbers of people, you bank the money that they bring and they spend, an average leisure tourist will spend between 800 and 1,000 rand per day. Conference delegates will spend 2,500 rand per day. So it's very, very important that this sector is seen to grow and to develop. We participate in terms of the work we do at the Convention Bureau with all these international alliances. What is interesting there is the Best Cities Global Alliance. You're a member of that, an accredited member. You have to go through a rigorous audited process with Lloyds in order to be accredited in terms of the service standards that you require. And we're a member there with other cities like Vancouver, Dubai, Singapore, Copenhagen, etc. So we play in a very big field at a very high level. And I think that's been reflected in terms of the success that we've achieved. During the 08-09 period, we submitted 29 formal bids, which are put together individually with local associations for meetings in our destination. The value of those brings in about $650 million. And the current situation is that we've secured 19 of those with $250 million rand worth of spend that's going to be coming to the province, with 18 currently pending. This is an example of some of the bid books that we prepare. As I say, they're crafted individually for presentation to international associations. And we push out about two of these a month. Then it's very important in terms of the work that we do that we go overseas and engage, and these are the various trade fairs which relate specifically to business tourism that we attend. It covers the Asia-Pacific region from an AIM point of view. EIBTM and IMEX looks after Europe. The Gulf and Centre of Business is GIBTM in Abu Dhabi, and of course Meetings Africa in Johannesburg. And then if you look at the engagements that we have, coming out of those, these are the kind of hot leads that we follow up. So, for example, at IMEX, which we attended in Frankfurt in March, we're currently in the process of preparing a bid for the World Congress of Nephrology, which was only in 2015, but it brings in 8,000 delegates. The spend there is $100 million. So you can see the value in terms of having a properly constituted convention bureau in terms of the work that you do. Okay, then around events, is also a critical part of that's the business tourism side that I've dealt with. Around events, it's obviously very critical, and of course the biggest event is the World Cup, which is coming up. But the idea with this is to generate as much visitation, working with event organizers as possible to the destination. And I can just give you some very brief examples. Absa Cape Epic is an event that we support. But if you look at the last column there, your return on investment from a media exposure point of view, because it's broadcast, the television coverage for this event is broadcast in 170 countries in 17 languages, with 2,000 hours of global television coverage. It's worth 1 billion rand. And that's what you're exposing the destination to in terms of global coverage. Other events like the Vodacom Funny Festival, that's much less in terms of the exposure, but there's 4 million rand. And we always try and bring in a tourism marketing component to the event itself. You come to the event, what do you do before the event? What do you do during the event? What do you do after the event? Maximize the spend, maximize the length of stay in the destination. Then, of course, the Jazz Festival, which I'm sure you're all well aware of, is a very successful event that's built up over the last couple of years. And that both has a Western Cape economic impact of 430 million, but also a South African impact of about 680 million in terms of spend for the people attending the festival. The JNB Met is another example of something that we would support. And this gives you an example of the kind of international coverage you get from an event. This was the Volvo Ocean Race, and you can look at the Los Angeles Times down there, a lot of online coverage, etc. You're positioning the destination constantly, and you're spending almost no money doing it. And that's what's important in terms of events, the events calendar that we produce. Then from a leisure and tourism marketing point of view, we focus on Africa and Asia in terms of all of those marketing platforms. Our primary focus is to service the travel trade and travel media, and to secure joint marketing agreements. And there's a whole variety there that speak to the markets that we operate in, and obviously in Europe, North and South America. We also, as part of what the department does, particularly around a tourism marketing perspective, provide support to SMEs to hone their skills around marketing their tourism businesses, acquiring skills in terms of that. And part of that is taking SMEs to the various big trade shows, et cetera, and mentoring them and assisting them in terms of their growth. This gives you an example of joint marketing agreements that we have concluded via the trade shows that we attend, lastminute.com. We spent 400,000 Rand in participation on this, and the value of the bookings that were generated was 4.9 million pounds in the UK, USA, and Germany. Travel Mood was another example. That was much more modest. We spent 100,000 there, and we got a return of 1.4 million. So you're influencing people to travel, but particularly around the issue of seasonality, so that if we do the joint marketing agreement, we say it must focus on travel out of the peak period, and it must have a component that spreads people around the province. It doesn't just bring them to Cape Town. In the guest relations program, we do a lot of hosting of foreign trade media and travel trade here in the destination, and again, we're getting relatively free coverage in Orford. These are just some of the examples. That's a Chinese production. This is something that was done with destination weddings and honeymoons this was a publication, I think, that was in the UK. And then, obviously, the e-business platform is an important component of what we do, which basically provides rich information on the destination and provides a income-generating capacity in terms of being able to book itineraries that you can put together on the website itself. Then there's some other highlights there. I don't want to go into that in too much detail. Then just around the 2010 marketing campaign that is being developed and is currently being rolled out, we're working very close together with South African Tourism. They have the mega bucks, which they're spending, obviously, with the big international television campaigns, and you see them on CNN and BBC World, et cetera, et cetera. What we're trying to do is to fill in the gap, to provide an information-rich, under-the-radar, in a way, campaign that allows people to translate that awareness into actually coming here and spending time in the destination. So from South African Tourism's point of view, we're marketing this thing on rhythm like you've never seen before, celebration like you've also never seen before, a welcome that you've never seen before, and of course the Disky Dance, which I'm sure all of you can do. you first. The game of soccer lasts for 90 minutes. Obviously, it's more about, 2010, it's about more than the game of soccer. To get the full experience of beautiful Cape Town and the Western Cape, you've got to go beyond the 90 minutes. The whole idea there is to say, okay, you attend these matches, but what are you doing in between time? Where are you going? What are you doing, etc.? Facilitating people's travel around the province and obviously around South Africa as well between the games. The whole rationale behind that is to leverage off 2010 to strengthen our position in existing markets like the UK, Germany, etc., but also to plant seed in new markets like Argentina and Brazil. And this is the biggest opportunity we've had to do that. And our tactical objective is to facilitate stays throughout the region before, between, and after the matches, enjoy a fuller range of experiences, and to motivate non-soccer-going visitors and locals to enjoy the vibe in the host city, Cape Town, in the Western Cape. Campaign channels, their themed itineraries, which are custom-made for the football fans who love to travel, and those are done around our destination brand characteristics. And those relate to outdoor active, natural beauty, eco and nature, gourmet, the whole food thing, culture and heritage, body, mind and spirit, and cosmopolitan vibe. The main platforms, because we have no money, is around website and e-marketing channels, because that's a relatively inexpensive way of doing it. We engage storytellers with that. There's a component aimed at trade and media, and of course fan ambassadors in terms of promoting the destination. And those are the themed itineraries. It's outdoor activists score an adrenaline hat trick, natural beauty, cheer a killer path on and off the field, gourmet delights, and your craving demands more than a burger. Culture and heritage, take in a bit of Cape culture as your team goes for glory, body, mind, and spirit. When the sound of the vuvuzela starts getting to you and you need something to soothe you, a little bit of a something, cosmopolitan vibe, living it up when the final whistle blows. That gives you an idea of the theming that we've done. Our expectations is embrace the campaign, adopt the campaign, learn the Disky, etc. There's some people who've done that. The campaign website is that, and you kick on beyond the 90 minutes. Should be click. There's a link on the South African Tourism 2010 landing page. We're the only province that's managed to achieve that, because I think we're the only province with a campaign. And then this is just some of the information that's on the website itself that you can see, which relates specifically to the campaign itself. And that's it. Thank you very much.
Thanks. It would be nice if we can get the disc presentation. We start with the chanting first. I know, it's technology. I hope it doesn't fail us in 2010. Technician from sound, we can assist them. You just have to tell us where to send the invoice.
Good morning to the committee. Good morning, Chair. Thank you for this opportunity. my presentation is going to bridge the host city of Cape Town and the provincial government. What we did 3 years ago, we wrote a strategic plan which was adopted by the provincial cabinet and the mayoral committee in the same meeting. And this was very important because we were expecting changes and a lack of continuity possibly impacting on 2010. And this, so I think that strategic plan was very important to adopt in 2006, and it has kept us as officials working together on this mega event. Now, our objectives as both the city and the province are to host a semi-final at all the games up to the semi-final successfully. But at the same time, based on the sustainable development approach, we want a long-term legacy, and we want very much the economic, the environmental, and the social side to be maximized through the event, but not just during the 1 month of the tournament. It's before, during, and after. As Dave has said, in fact, around events, you want to use the build-up, and we've had many FIFA visits and many media visits. And in fact, the final draw is probably the biggest attraction that Cape Town itself is going to be hosting. up it to the World Cup. And then afterwards, we want everybody to remember that this is a really good place to be. We were very successful. We were very efficient. It was a happy time. It was a safe time. And, in fact, word of mouth is very important in marketing globally. Now, also part of what we see is the link between tourism, trade, and investment. If people have a good experience here, they drink our wine, they buy our craft, they enjoy our music, they buy it, they take it home, they import it. And eventually, if they're that impressed with our products and our service rates and our capacity, they will invest in our country. So we see a very strong continuity between holding this platform in a successful manner and then building tourism, trade, and investment. And lastly, our objective is not just for the city of Cape Town itself. It is to spread the benefits beyond the city, and in this case, it's the rest of our province. I think everybody probably knows that the 9 host cities in South Africa are direct signatories with FIFA. They have those agreements, and the provinces do not have a formal role. The province's role is a supportive one as far as we see. We see ourselves as on the developmental side, but supporting the city and making sure the benefits are spread. Now, that strategic plan that I mentioned, it's got 4 pillars, and those 2 outer pillars are largely the pillars that belong to the host city of Cape Town. They have a very strict agreement. They have to deliver on time. They have lots of regulations and bylaws and so on to ensure that are operative. Our role is, together with the city, not excluding them from this role, but is very much more on what we call leverage and legacy. And the leverage is around bringing the trade, tourism, investment, and the legacy is more around environmental and social, plus, of course, economic development. So this is a very slow slide, I'm afraid. But the idea generally is to take Cape Town and the rest from where it is up into a more competitive global role, but one that where we also share. So I'm moving quickly on to the legacy, bearing time in mind that obviously there's legacy around stadia. We I'll come on to that, and transport. Then there's the social legacy, which is very much around how young people are going to benefit, and we've got a lot of programs in relation to that. Then we've got an environmental legacy, a strong green goal element, which is using 2010 to educate people about climate change and how what they can do to mitigate that. This is just a very brief overview slide of how we're organized in the province. We have different departments that are clustered into various legacy areas, and I try to coordinate them. So, infrastructure. 50% of the accommodation is outside the municipal boundary of Cape Town. So it does give us quite a challenge when it comes to transporting people to the matches. You will see those black blobs are indicating where most of the accommodation is, and most of it is along the coast. So although there are B&Bs and guest houses and some hotels inland, most of our challenge is around the coast. Now, last year we issued what we call a marketing tool, a base camp book. We took all our luxury hotels and we looked at where the nearest pitches were, and we put them together in a book, and we've been marketing to the teams that are going to be setting up. Well, it's very difficult because we don't know who's going to qualify, but we're going to the teams most likely to qualify. And we're bringing out a second edition of this book next month, and it will be ready for the final draw when the teams will then know where they're going to be based, who's going to be playing out of Cape Town in the first round, and so on and so on. So this has been a very useful tool, and we've produced it in 4 languages. Then just the transport side, we've got major upgrades of Cape Town International Airport, as I'm sure everyone experiences regularly. The new airport, the new wing, major new wing, will be open in November. So before the final draw, I'm sure the comfort of the members who fly in and out will be improved enormously. Cape Town Station, also very important upgrade. They're having, it's going to be lively and bright and clean and a pleasure to be there. There'll be eating places, there'll be retail and tourism information and good quick information systems. So we're very, very happy with what Intersight is doing with there. Now this is, if the committee will indulge me for a moment, this is where the engineers get, you know, having fun. This is an overview of our transport services into Cape Town. Those are the Now listen, it even has sound effects. So those are the trains coming into the centre. You saw the buses, the roads. And then we even have this at another scale, which shows you how the connectivity from the Cape Town station. Those are the buses that will go through to the stadium. And these are the people who are walking, because that's also the fan mile connected from the station through the fan park area, which is at the Grand Parade, and in the pedestrianized areas through to the stadium. And then there will be shuttle services as well. So I think the toys are over now, too. This is also just a quick view of some of the upgrades, and we're very, very happy, I think, as people of the Western Cape, that we are receiving significant funding to upgrade our roads. And they're not only in the advantaged areas, we're also upgrading roads in the disadvantaged areas. I'm going very quickly, Chair, so I hope you'll excuse me. This is the latest picture of the stadium. The roof, the glass roof is now on, and a lot of the fittings are being made now, are being installed now. The pitch level is even, and the pitch has grown out in the Philadelphia area, and it's going well. We often get a question about sustainability, and this is an early concern. I've been on the city's committee that went out for bids on the stadium for the designs. I've been involved all the way through, and we've made sure together that this thing is going to be sustainable in the long term. We went out an international bid and sale and Stade de France, that's a South African marketing sports marketing company, and the stadium in Paris have come together, and they won the consortium bid. It's a long-term lease, and it's a very exciting program. They're looking at not only football but rugby as well in the longer term, as well as concerts and events, rallies and so on and so on. So there's an explicit transfer of skills. I think that's very important. We've built all that into the contract. Then the urban park. Now, I don't know, many of you don't come from Cape Town, but this area of Greenpoint Common has been really a very run-down area. It's just been neglected for many years, and some of the sporting areas have even fallen into complete neglect. The golf course has been rebuilt completely. It's really a very exciting international level golf course, only 9 holes, but still. And all the sporting areas have been revamped, rebuilt completely in some cases. And now there's an urban area, a park area, which will be used here down to the lighthouse in an unstructured sort of way. So people will be able to take part, walks and have picnics and run around and so on. I think you may know, if you've been around Cape Town on a weekend or a public holiday, how the lawns opposite the SABC and Sea Point are used. They're used by all the people of Cape Town, not just the locals. And that's what we want. This is a regional park. This is a regional facility. Then it's important to build your skills. And we've been working very closely with the universities. We work with all of 4 of them in a consortium. They are providing volunteers. They are doing research for us. They're providing their facilities in terms of residences and also transport for the World Cup itself, even down to early childhood learning, which is quite interesting. Legacy not only happens after. legacy has happened for us before from the beginning. We've been upgrading security services, emergency services. Our two new helicopters, in fact, were delivered last year already, and that's out of a budget for 2010. So I just want to point out to the committee that legacy is not something that you can expect only afterwards. If you build it in and you plan it in, you can already get your budgeting right so that you have legacy up to, during, and after. For us, safety and security is very important, not just for the foreigners, obviously for our local people as well. And so having more resources for more training and more staff and equipment and so on has made a big difference already. I think that attitudes are now the thing. We've done a lot with resources, and now the attitudes of everybody needs to be very positive and focus on making the visitor stay a good one. It's also had an interesting, I know everybody understands the challenges we have sometimes with cooperative governance in the Western Cape. It's important because many of our municipalities have changed political leadership. They've changed municipal managers with sort of regularity, and we have local government elections, national and provincial elections, and so on. The World Cup has actually taught us how to work together in a very practical way. It's got a beginning, an end, and a budget, and the deliverables and milestones are very clear. So it gives us a good structure to work together. This was the SoccerX exhibition last year. And many of the municipalities, the Cape Film Commission, some of the agencies that you heard mentioned earlier, Cape Craft and Design Institute, obviously CTRU and others were all involved. Now, on the economic opportunity, I've just listed a few here. These are some of the areas that we are working in collectively. Now, I'm focusing here on the smaller and medium opportunities. Craft is big, is really. We have the Cape Craft and Design Institute, and they've been working with crafters across the province for the past 18 months on preparing for 2010. And obviously one has to be very careful because one cannot use the official FIFA logo in any way. And of course a lot of the crafters just wanted to paint on a macadapa or whatever. So we've had to have a very innovative way of providing craft that don't impinge on those regulations but are nevertheless creative and very exciting. And one of our good examples, and I should have brought the committee some copies of the kelp vuvuzelas. Kelp is the seaweed that flies around on our shores. And these very enterprising young men collected together some unemployed people who were painting and so on, and they've produced the most beautiful kelp-painted vuvuzelas with a flag, South African flag, and different scenes. And you can get them painted in whatever, the colors of your team or your corporate colors or anything like that. We've been working with Wines of South Africa. They're training 1,000 sommeliers for, those are wine experts for 2010, mostly out of unemployed young people who are looking to possibly get into the hospitality industry, and they will be used during 2010, and then they have a recognized qualification afterwards. Music and cultural activities, lots of examples of that, including, you know, drumming, and there's even a vuvuzela orchestra. Which sounds like a contradiction in terms, but they have found nice ways of doing that. Earlier it was mentioned about B&Bs and guest houses, and Match, the accommodation agency of FIFA, have accredited a number of our B&Bs and guest houses, so they're officially on the list, but there are lots more that are linked in. Hospitality, this is a very important one. You know, when we've sort of experienced some of the big football events abroad, like the UEFA Cup and the World Cup in 2006. There were lots of opportunities for small businesses to be doing things like chocolates in the shape of footballs and cakes and decorations and different kinds of desserts and ways of decorating food. food tables, catering, not equipment, but all the goodies that go around a major catering event in football theming. And we've come across a lot of very innovative ways of doing that. And you can just do that out of your kitchen at home, actually. Alive and Kicking, unemployed women stitching footballs. We've bought a whole lot of them in the province. Very good quality. They're leather footballs. Transport, taxis and rickshaws, and bringing taxis into a project in a structured way. So we're having the opening of the Centre for Hope in Khayelitsha on the 5th of December, and we're looking to work with some of the local taxi drivers in the area to help with transport. Green Goal, a very exciting project introduced as part of the German legacy in 2006, and on the 15th of September this year, the Premier and the Mayor will be launching the the progress report on these 41 projects. A lot of success there. Now, just in terms of the training sites, the city and the province agreed on two venue-specific training sites. Each match site has to have two training sites. One is the Athlone Stadium, and the other is we chose our stadium, which is in Philippi. And I put that there because those are the neighbors in the Philippi Stadium. It's an extremely deprived area, and we are upgrading the Philippi Stadium partly for the VSTS, the venue-specific training site, but also for legacy. So this will be a stadium that we want a tenant who will run youth training programs. The pitch will be the same quality as the Greenpoint Stadium and the same for Athlone. A lot of projects being run over the 1,000 days, it feels like a long time ago, but street football, bringing youngsters into kind of productive exercise and activity. We've launched the Football for Hope. This is the sod turning earlier this year in May. FIFA are building 20 centres of hope across Africa. Five of them are in South Africa, and the first one is the one in Khayelitsha. And that will be opened on the 5th of December, the day after the draw. These projects are very important in terms of our long-term legacy, but also engaging young people, particularly in productive activity. We've got school holidays of 6 weeks next year during the World Cup, and we are running a schools program to engage them so that they don't get they don't just sit at home and they participate. We're also partnering with a number of NGOs. This is a very nice project that we've done quite a few, including for Women's Day this year. We got 300 girls playing football in partnership with Dreamfield. So that was the street football, the global picture. They had their World Games here in Cape Town 2 years ago. And then we do also public viewing for events. This is how we are practicing, we are learning about public viewing. Those are the public viewing areas in Cape Town. And then in the rest of the province, we have one per district because that is all we can cope with in terms of resources, emergency services, disaster management, and SAP. I know that there are many towns that want such a public viewing area, but we cannot risk having anything going wrong, so we have to make sure that everything is properly resourced. And these are the public viewing areas. There are also a number of companies that are wanting to run private viewing areas, and those will also have to be approved as events because we are absolutely sure that we do not want anything to go wrong. So, Chair, this is my last slide. It just picks up on the legacy because I'm sure that is part of what you are interested in. The readiness is pretty clear. The stadium will be on time. The stadium is going very well. The roads are all on time. And you can experience that with the airports and the stations and so on. They're physically tangible. But these are some of the other things that we are doing that are happening throughout the province. And I believe that we can make a great contribution to Africa's readiness, and some of the pessimism that you read in the international media as to how ready we will be or how safe we will be. So this just gives an indication of what we are doing in a very practical way, and that will be our contribution to reducing Afro-pessimism. And I may say as a final point, we've been asked to help with Brazil. I've twice now been to Brazil and at their invitation to prepare for 2014. So I think this is a good cooperation, South-South cooperation. And thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thanks very much for all those presentations. 281 days now to go. Members, it's your turn to engage. I see Honorable Freddy, Honorable Binyami, Honorable Van Leyen. Can give it a go.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, let me start out from thanking Dr. Platsky, Mr. Franken, Franson, and the two officials from the Department of the Western Cape for such in-depth and precise briefing. But yeah, I've got a bit of a worry. I think a month or a couple of weeks ago we had the city of Cape Town appearing before this committee, also to give their briefing on their tourism and what else and whatever they or what went with the tourism. And we've asked a specific question of why the funding was stopped to Cape Town Routes Unlimited. And the city of Cape Town said to us that funding was not stopped. There was a type of an agreement to fund for a year and then to relook at the funding model. And then if they are happy with the Cape Town Routes Unlimited audit report and the Cape Town Routes Unlimited, what do they call that, the marketing report and that, then funding will proceed again. Now, I see in the presentation that Mr. Franson has said that they're struggling with funding. I want to find out, say, because I know previously under the previous administration that Cape Town Routes was singled out as the marketing operator for the Western Cape, city of Cape Town as well as the Western Cape, with Westgrow, Cape Town Routes Unlimited also. So it's a bit of a worry where, you know, and I specifically raised the question, why the city of Cape Town has now decided to interfere or stop the funding of Cape Town Routes Unlimited. See that there's a change of administration in 2009. And it was said, no, this letter was sent about a year ago, or the Cape Town Routes Unlimited were given notice about a year ago. Because Cape Town Routes Unlimited are doing quite a very good job in terms of marketing the Western Cape, not just city of Cape Town, but the Western Cape. And the gateway to the Western Cape, it is the city of Cape Town. And yes, so the city of Cape Town needs to get preferential, or Cape Town needs to get preferential treatment towards the other parts of the Western Cape. But the marketing should be equal, and I think Cape Town Routes Unlimited are doing that. So I need to find out, Jay, we just need to get clarity about that funding model. And has Cape Town Routes, were Cape Town Routes Unlimited aware of the notice that the city has given them about 2 years or a year ago, the city of Cape Town? Chair, the second question is that there's an allegation going around in Cape Town in terms of that now the province tourism sector of the province are not so kind to the historically disadvantaged areas. People from Khayelitsha, Mitchell's Plain, Yester River, Grassy Park are applying to switch over to bed and breakfasts and all that, and there's a stall of approving those applications. But the amount of people from Constantia, Bergfleet, Meadowridge, Glencairn, Plattekloof apply, the licenses are being given much more faster. Like I said, it's an allegation. You can't always believe the newspapers, but sometimes the newspapers are talking the truth as well. Specifically the Argus. The other question is the rural areas. Everything has been focused on 2010. But 2010 will come and go. The soccer will come and go. What's going to be there for the rural areas? Will the rural areas be there? Will they be looked after so that they can be sustained after 2010? Chair, the other thing is also the safety. There was a spat between Sandpark, the city, and the province in terms of who's keeping the tourist destination safe and SAPs. It's winter, so people hasn't been up the mountain quite a lot, but in summer we get a lot of muggings on the mountain. Are people being, the insurance been given that people are safe? Because, and it's specifically with our overseas tourists being mugged, and that carries a negative message over. I know last year I was in Switzerland on a parliamentary work, and I've read in the paper that Swiss tourist has been marked on Cape Town Mountain while walking, and the guys are saying to me, but you said you members of parliament, but look here, is your country safe? So we need to look at that. And then, Chair, on the other hand, I want to thank Dr. Plasky because she has been very pivotal in driving the province's tourism as well as economic development, as well as head of 2010 in the province. Am I right, Doctor? Yeah, that's correct. I've got your protection, Rich. I know the mayor will give Honorable Van Lingen free tickets and the premier, so because we don't belong to the same party, I'm going to buy Honorable Van Lingen. Or maybe I can get from you. I just see Dr. Plasky in the slide that they haven't mentioned the taxis going into the city. We don't want another taxi revolution on our hands, so if you could just probably put the taxis also in that nice presentation with the noise and the sound effects going into the city. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. My first question has been correctly covered by Honorable Adams. A week before last, we had the presentation from the National Department. What was so interesting is that it was able to break the challenges of accommodation as per different provinces. I thought maybe it was going to assist us to have a slide that was going to assist in relation to that. Why I'm raising it is because we are going to be able to do effective oversight comparing what was presented by the National Department and what we are presenting. And the other issue, I agree entirely with you when I'm saying the lasting impact depends on us of this 2010 event. And it's only if we are honest to each other about challenges on the ground. I like it when you were highlighting that you have your enterprise development assisting even SMMEs, but even the National Department, when they dealt with that aspect, there was a specific question that why can't we have specifics so that we can be able to say it's true, we are definitely assisting our people on the ground. Like the FIFA Center of Hope, it's a good thing, it's here, it's in Khayelitsha. Why can't we have the very same people that are benefiting, that are from rural areas, to say in Khayelitsha we have these people, in Kukulet we have these people, so that we can be able to respond to what is being raised by Honorable Adams as allegations that about things that are happening on the ground, to say, no, there is no way that you can even start talking about these allegations, because we have figures reflecting correct percentages of people benefiting on the ground. The other point is the one of accommodation. You are saying 50% is going to be coming from outside Cape Town. Maybe if you can take us through about the current status of accommodation of Western Cape, and are you going to be able, from the national presentation, it's clear that we are expecting almost 1 million, 400,000+ people, even though they're not going to come at once. But as Western Cape, as a province, in relation to 2010, when you are checking the current accommodation that you have, are you going to be equal to the task? What are the current challenges that we can maybe deal with? The other point is the one of e-mentorship program. It's a very good one. But it was even said before. But Jefferson, I strongly feel that we'll have it always theoretically. Let's unpack it. If you are saying we are running a mentorship program as Western Cape, we have these 5 companies. Now, after 6 months, we have realized they can do on their own and they are doing very fine. Or we have these 2, they still have some challenges. It was not money spent on them. So that we can be able to get in and ask. But to have the statement, we can be convinced and say things are happening on the ground. Because when we raised it, even in the presentation from the National Department, we said, no, we want that reflection of spread from all the provinces. And now we're having provinces. Provinces, if they can be specific, it will make us to make a comparison and be able to assist where there are gaps, so that at the end of the day, all of us can be in this thing together in a very good and progressive way that would make our people on the ground to say, we are from rural areas, but we are part of this thing. As you showed us a slide where we are trying to have a facility for training, yet around it, there are some serious challenges, of which it's a reflection of the reality of what is happening. And if in all the other important aspects, we can try to identify the challenges so that we can try to deal with them. Thanks.
No, something here.
Honorable Chairperson. Sometimes one does not want to be recorded. The 50% of beds outside Cape Town, or 50% of beds inside Cape Town, are they FIFA registered, or are they beds graded by the Tourism Grading Council, or are they just beds available? And then also in the same vein, where Honorable Adams asked the question of the permission granted to people in the for the township experience and the refusals made, were they made on the grounds of grading standards or FIFA standards or city standards? Because there are various types of standards, and we must just not throw mud at the moment at one another. We must try and get a perspective. And then last but not the least, I thought that we all had to come and gain from the World Cup experience with your 50% beds outside in the rural areas or wherever they are. And my question, are we utilizing the townships properly, as Adam said? But then my little bit of hair is standing on end because of the fact that I now read that you're bringing in the QE2. Now, I know I'm on dangerous territory here and that I should speak gingerly, but I believe that this luxury liner is going to be refurbished here in Cape Town. But at the same time, the fear when you communicate with the public, now this young lady said that tourism is business and stakeholders and department and city and all the stakeholders. I cannot believe that the tourism or the accommodation trade in Cape Town said, not a problem, bring in the QE2, we're not scared. I don't believe a word of it. Because in my book, it's money that's going to be shipped out. They're not going to, they will say they are going to train staff, but they're going to take the trained staff from the existing establishments and use them and off they go again. I'm not very happy with the QE2 because I don't understand the full implication of it. So if you could just help us there, and then I think I'm going to stop. Thank you.
Any other question? Okay.
I heard my sister here mentioning that they are in partnership with the agencies. I don't know whether they are making follow-up because those people are having empty promises. You mentioned Msombo that you are in partnership with them in order to help to develop the rural area.
Honorable Nyambi.
Sorry, Chair, I forgot to raise the issue of the MERG, the officially accredited company by FIF. Any challenges that you're experiencing or you are working with them quite fine?
You know, I'm afraid we're not going to have a second round because of time. So whoever hasn't asked won't ask. And those that are going to respond, I'll ask them to be quick because they have too much time. And no more questions, then I'll ask mine. I thought you'd ask them on my behalf. Withdrawal of the funding. Hey, it puts me in sixes because one time I hear another thing. I think you will respond later. Today I heard another thing, you know. So we still have to do a follow-up. How do you plan to grow tourism in the face of recession? This is what we want to hear now. South Africa, we're facing recession, we're not out yet. How do you plan to grow it to be sustainable? And who are the key role players in tourism? And any lessons learned from the Confederation Cup and the rugby that we stage that would assist us? Any joint initiatives that you undertake, whether with other provinces or with other countries. I had a little bit of mention with Namibia, but we have SADC, we've got SAPC, you know, what's happening there? We cannot be having these relations. How far do you go with cultural tourism? I had very little on cultural tourism. So the 2010 would come and go without us. Now, have you profiled tourists according to their reason for the visit? Do you have mountaineering? Do you have you profile them? But then specifically on cultural tourism. And cultural tourism in urban areas, not in town. I mean in rural areas. And what is it exactly? And lastly, on 2010, you know, in fearing, there's been a complaint general that there's no vibe for 2010. You know, there's no activity. We should all be greeting each other. Hey, hello 2010, and so on. The vibe is not there. And I thought from the presentation we might get a first 60 dance and then so that we see the vibe. What do we do about the vibe, the 2010 vibe, you know, from now up to 2010?
sure you can respond. All of you, I'm sure, will have about 15 minutes to respond so that we take another presentation.
Can I be, I'm not sure if this is protocol in your committee, but I just want to preach it.
Oh, that's 2010. Now you should have learned this now. Then that really brings the vibe, eh? Who's that to respond? Is there three of you? We've got 15 minutes. If you take five, it's your own.
Okay, just Chair, thank you. Just in terms of the funding issue, the current situation is that the money that came from the city is currently given to Cape Town Tourism from a marketing point of view. The net result of that is that the resources are being diluted simply because the same kind of work that we do is being done there. And obviously the resources required to do the work at Cape Town Tourism in terms of staffing, in terms of overheads, etc., is diluting that marketing money further. So that is the reality that we sit with. You've also got a situation where the brand is getting a little bit diluted as well, because you've got one organization doing the same thing as the other organization talking across businesses to each other. You've got a situation where Cape Town Tourism will sit next door to us at a trade show, spending a lot of money buying a booth to be there, when actually all you really need is one booth, that type of thing. So I think, you know, there's a similar problem in other provinces as well, where the city and the provincial focus is separate, but actually it's the same thing. And what you said is absolutely correct. Cape Town is the hook for the province. And I've been with Cape Town Roots Unlimited for 4.5 years, and 80% of what we talk about very often is the city, and we're constantly pushing the province in terms of spreading the benefits and so on. And you can't market Cape Town without Stellenbosch. You can't market Cape Town without Hermanus. You can't market it without the West Coast, etc. So in terms of the marketing message that we're bringing, we continue to market Cape Town. That hasn't changed, despite the fact that the funding was withdrawn. What I can say, though, is that the MEC and the mayoral committee member for tourism have met with the CEOs of the two respective organizations and various officials, and there is an interim period now of a few months where we're supposed to come up with a new model in terms of tourism. And hopefully that will then take us into a post period where the limited resources we have can be better used in terms of being focused, hopefully, in one organization, so we can free up as much money for marketing as we possibly can. That is a process that is underway at the moment. That's as much as I can say about that. The challenges that exist, though, specifically relate to things like joint marketing agreements. When we go overseas, and I showed you that slide for example, the thing we did with lastminute.com and with Travel Mood, which is a big UK tour operator. When we had the money from both entities, we had about 1.2 million rand a year to do joint marketing exercises. My budget currently is 200,000, so we're not doing that. I mean, it's so limited that in order to drive tourism during the low period, in order to get that regional spread, which is the focus when we do that type of thing, we haven't got the resources to do it. And Cape Town is not selling the western province, or the rural, the outside of Cape Town. So because of the split, it's now not functioning. From a convention bureau perspective, we belong to this Best Cities Global Alliance, which is very much driven in terms of performance, and there are certain things we need to do. We've already run out of our budget. So there are certain programs that we cannot fulfill. And if you look at the amount of money that is generated through the work of the convention bureau itself, the fact that Cape Town Tourism is sitting with a budget for business tourism and they've hired a resource to run business tourism, they quite frankly have no idea about business tourism, but that money is sitting there. We can't spend it because they've got it and they don't know what to do with it. So this is the reality. I mean, because that happened just in the last year or so, that this new structure has been built up within Cape Town Tourism to do destination marketing. That's the reality. I'm hoping, and certainly CTRU's position, is that sanity will prevail. People will look at the very limited resources that we have and say, we need to free up as much for tourism marketing as we can and cut back on the supporting services and infrastructure and so on. Then just in terms of the question about recession, I think it's largely dealt with what I've said. I mean, the work that we've been doing, tour operators in Germany, tour operators in the United Kingdom, because it's driven through the private sector. Our role is to facilitate what the private sector can do in terms of tourism marketing. So we would get involved with international tour operators to drive, and they're coming to us and saying, we're having a really hard time now, can you help? And I'm saying, sorry, can't help, we haven't got any money. So that problem is a further problem. What we are doing is maintaining our presence. We are going to the trade shows. We are doing as much as we can. We're cutting back and trimming our programs to the absolute nth degree in order to try and cover as much as we're doing. The fact of the matter is, from a leisure tourism marketing point of view, Germany is our second biggest international market. I have no money for international marketing in Germany this year at all. We've cut that completely out of the budget because there is no money. So, I mean, it's very important, particularly in a time of recession. Any marketing, you can't cut back marketing, and a retailer will tell you that. If you cut back the marketing, when you come out of the recessionary period, you'll continue to suffer. So we need to have our brand overseas. We need to have it in Germany. We can't afford to do it. So that is the situation that we're stuck with. In terms of joint initiatives, we've done a number of joint initiatives. The Cape Namibia route, for example, we've worked very closely with Northern Cape Tourism. We have a standing memorandum of agreement with Eastern Cape Tourism and KZN Tourism in terms of developing provincial tourism routes between Durban and Cape Town and so on. So we're looking to work together collaboratively, and there are a number of initiatives, particularly on the e-marketing platform, where we're working with KZN Tourism, hoping to pull Eastern Cape Tourism in as well, and with Gauteng as well. So there's a lot of work that we're doing. It's not just, you can't just market Western Cape in isolation, because there's a broader product out there, so we do need to be working together. Yeah, I think.
Next 5 minutes.
Thanks, Chair. I'll start with accommodation, and there were a number of concerns around accommodation. The 50% estimate is based on what is available, so what is registered in our various tourism bureaus. It's not all FIFA or MATCH accredited, it's just what is available. And I think that one should be cautiously optimistic about the figures. There are a number of factors that are going to impact on this estimated 400,000 visitors. The first one is who qualifies for the World Cup. So, and this is not for the press. So, for example, if North Korea qualifies,
I just hope they're not listening. This is not for the press.
This is the first thing I saw putting pick up in. Yes. Now, I'm making not a typical example. If North Korea, which has qualified for the World Cup, comes and is based and playing in Cape Town, it may be very good for media and for the journalists and so on, but they're not going to bring lots of fans. So, it really depends. The number of fans who come depend on, which teams qualify. So we know that the Brazilians, well, they talk about bringing 30,000 fans and so on and so on. And some of the teams that we've spoken to give a fair indication. They say, certainly, obviously, you can't depend on the German figures, because then it was just popping over the border from, say, Italy to Germany for the day or that sort of thing. It's incomparable because we're long distance. Secondly is the recession. Now, a lot of these football fans save up their money from one World Cup to the next, and they're not going to forego a visit. But they might have a shorter visit, so they might leave when their team drops out, for example, of the tournament, instead of spending a full 2 or 3 or 4 weeks in the country and traveling around, which is what we hoped for. So we're not sure how the recession is going to impact on the budget of the visitors and the fans. The third thing is dependent on who gets to play in Cape Town, and this is related to the North Korea example, because obviously if we have England playing Holland or Brazil playing Germany, then, the familiarity with our market, and this is where it links in with what Dave was saying about from the CTRU side, it reinforces our market. We are also hoping to use this as into the new markets. You know, it's entree into the new markets. And so, for example, South Korea, which has a huge golfing community, for example, if they were to base themselves in one of our golf resorts in the Western Cape, that would give huge marketing for nothing, as far as we're concerned. So I just wanted to give a bit of a caution. On the QE2 thing, nobody asked us whether the QE2 was a good thing or a bad thing. It was an arrangement made with the Port Authority. So I'm not sure. I can't comment. I haven't heard any criticism of it, but I simply can't comment. I think that there are large numbers of guest houses and B&Bs and so on willing and able and available to sign up with MATCH. Many of them have already. I'll leave it to my colleagues in tourism to know. I don't know, Henri, Member Adams, whether there have been any refusals and if there are problems with that. I know certainly nobody has reported that to me saying, you know, X guest house in Manenberg has a problem. I haven't heard that. The issue about MATCH and our relationship with MATCH is the relationship that we have is largely around base camps and not with individual accommodation institutions. Our relationship is relatively cordial. It's about making the best marketing opportunity for us and for our base camp options in the Western Cape. But I would say, I think once more, one has to say something about cautioning the industry. This is not a time to be greedy. This is a time to invest, to make sure that we bring as many people to the country during the World Cup, before, during, and after, of course, but during the World Cup as possible. And this is an investment in our long-term profile as a value for money destination. It's not a time to go and put one's prices up and to go and milk the market. I think it's quite reasonable to say that there should be higher season prices in the middle of June, July, which is not normally the case because that's normally the winter season here. But it's not a time to be greedy. And that has been a little bit what underlies some of the to-ing and fro-ing about MATCH. So I think I'll just leave it at that because I'm not intimately involved. The Confed Cup lessons, very interesting lessons. We've attended a number of debriefing sessions with our colleagues in the north, where, you know, the host cities, and lessons all the way through from volunteers to transport to, and we could spend an entire day on that, Chair. I think one of the things we learned was about public viewing. It can be very cold, especially in the north. I mean, it people laugh about the weather, saying in Cape Town it rains, but we never go below zero. Mm-hmm. And to stand out in the rain in wherever, Mangaung or wherever, and watch a game on Kimberley. The screen, you've really got Kimberley. You've got to be really committed. On that question, so we've looked at some indoor and places for public viewing, with the possibility if Bafana is in the final, then we can expand our public viewing. So, you know, it's a question of being able to play the game almost, see where we expand. So our Tambo Hall, for example, in Khayelitsha, you know, takes a large number of people and there's overflow space outside, so one can expand the public viewing. That is an important lesson from the Confed Cup. We can't compare ourselves with Germany. It's dark early, and it could be very cold. On joint initiatives, the Northern Cape, I work very closely with the coordinator in Northern Cape, and we have included Kimberley in our base camp offerings, and in fact he came to market with us abroad. So we work closely with the Northern Cape. And on the Eastern Cape, actually, we work fairly closely with them on the transport issue, because if you think about Nelson Mandela Bay being just a couple of hours from George, Knysna, actually the Southern Cape accommodation node is closer to PE than it is to Cape Town. So a lot of the games that will be held in PE, people will be staying in the Southern Cape. So there's a good collaboration on that score.
I hope I've covered most of it.
The vibe. We start, you can't have a vibe like 100% all the time for a year. So we are focusing on moments. So 100 days, 200 days, 300 days, whatever. We have something big, and we have flags, and we have drumming and all sorts of vuvuzelas and so on. We've started with our own officials. The province of the Western Cape, the government, we employ 68,000 people, including all the teachers and the nurses and so on and so on. And we've had competitions and nice things in the departments for the year to go. So we're hoping that that then spreads out. We will be working, we are working with the schools and the clubs and so on. And now for the first time, the faith-based communities. There's a big event in Durbanville coming up on Heritage Day. So we're spreading to different groups, but yeah, I mean, that's the best we could do with our limited resources.
Last 5 minutes.
Okay. I'm going to respond to the issue on safety. And just to say, I think one thing is South Africa as a tourism destination, we ranked number 8 in terms of Africa and the Middle East. And Mauritius is number one. We ranked number 2, sorry. And Mauritius is number 1. But one of the reasons we're not doing very well is the whole issue of safety. So it's a very important issue to us to address. And as I said before when I did the presentation, within the department we have a program just on tourism safety, and that we call the tourism safety support. What happened was during the last year, when I think last year and the year before, when we had that problem of Table Mountain and people being marked on Table Mountain, we worked closely with the South African National Parks to ensure that the tourists are safe. And, of course, at times, you can't control this. It gets out of hand. But what we are doing is that one of the programs that we do is issuing tourism safety tips through the accommodation establishments, through SAPS, and we're working very closely again with SAPS to ensure that they also have information on that they can give away to tourists or people that come through. And the tips is about just like guiding tourists on what to do and what not to do, where to go, you know, how to behave in certain areas. Another thing that we've just started now, we've hooked up with the South African Safari Tourism Association, which is called SASA, which is a private sector body for tour operators, the Western Cape branch of it. We've hooked up with them through CTRU, of course. We funded through the money that we give to CTRU, of course. We're working with them on programs that can be, we want to be more proactive, you know, not wait for tourists to be attacked and come up with, you know, counseling and all those things. So what SASA is going to be doing is that they're going to be working with SAPS, of course, again, trying to identify the hotspots that they think most of the muggings or attacks take place, and coming up with preventive measures to say these are the hot spots and this is how we can do to try to protect our tourists in the country. But, of course, these are some of the programs that they'll be working on in terms of tourism safety. You can always not win. You know, there'll always be incidences where tourists are being mugged, but we try very hard to ensure that tourists and, of course, South Africans, Western Cape people are also protected within their own country, within their own province, sorry. And The issue of, I think Dave and Dr. Plasky have said a little bit on the issue of joint cooperation with other provinces, but from a developmental point of view too, we are working very closely with especially the Eastern Cape and the Northern Cape in terms of our tourism integrated development plan. The Eastern Cape is taking our model to come to look at it and see how they can implement that and work around that to work on their developmental plan. The Western Cape, too, we've had engagements with the Northern Cape, too, where they're looking at our framework, the one that I spoke about, where we have four social partners. They're very interested in that to also ensure that they can just try to adjust it to their own situation. What we're trying to do is to have that working cooperation, and we have tourism gateways. We're implementing tourism gateways in Plettenberg Bay, the other one within Van Rensdorp, the other one within Beaufort West. So we've also invited these provinces to be part of the gateways because, the one in Storms River is in the Eastern Cape. So we're saying to them, while we're there in your province, how do we work together to ensure that, so we've offered them space in our tourism because gateways are like your first point of call into the province. So we're giving them space within those gateways to be part of that. And also looking at how we can work together through the gateways. And the other issue is on cultural tourism. The whole issue of cultural tourism, what we've done was we have the past year up until last July, we were revising our Integrated Tourism Development Plan, what you call the ITDF, which was launched in 2005. So we revised it. And the ITDF looked at the development of tourism, attractions, sites, routes, and infrastructure. So part of that, and it also looked at niche markets and subsectors. So one of the niche markets that are coming out of the ITDF is cultural tourism. So currently, we don't have a position paper on that, but I think it's coincidental that we're having our partnership committee meeting, like I spoke about the four partners, the social partners, and one of the agenda items that came through civil society was a discussion on cultural tourism, especially in terms of how we extend that into the township. So that's something that we're starting to look into in terms of how we start, how we're going to position ourselves as a cultural destination and ensuring that especially your township people tend to benefit in that. So we still have to work on a position paper on that, but it's a niche market that we think we need to start looking strongly into.
Can I then finish off with the last questions? I mean, there was a whole lot of concerns that you raised around the figures of our enterprise development program and also where the SMME is based. And unfortunately, we didn't bring those figures today. But if through you, Chair, we can be allowed to circulate those figures, we've got the figures of exactly where the SMMEs that have come through our program are coming from. Like I said, all our interventions, we reach out to all the six regions in the province. But today, I didn't bring those figures. We'll definitely, maybe before I leave, I'll get an email of address of the secretary, and then we'll forward those figures. You're right. I think the mentorship, or even just all the enterprise programs, we need to learn from them. It's not about putting a tick next to a program and say, done. It is about improving the quality and the lives of those people so that, you know, their businesses are more sustainable. This program has been run since 2004. This year we are in our fifth year, and we've just appointed a service provider now to do an evaluation of the entire tourism enterprise program, including the mentorship. Because what we have been doing on a regular basis is to get feedback only from the entrepreneurs that participate in the program. But now we're looking at the entire evaluation, you know, of the different tiers of or the different levels of the program to say what have we learned, what has gone wrong, what has gone right, what can we implement in future, because a lot of things are changing now, and therefore we need to learn so that the outcomes of the evaluation there could therefore inform, you know, our thinking in terms of the new program. You had a concern about licenses, which I didn't understand what licenses are those. I just want to say that the Provincial Tourism Department doesn't issue any licenses on accommodation or tour operators. If somebody wants to become a tour operator, they deal with the Department of Public Works and Transport, and the Tour Operating Licensing Board issues those licenses. The only licenses that our department issues is around tourist guiding. So I'm not sure when you refer to licenses, because you said as soon as so people from the townships, when they apply for licenses, they are not looked at, but people from the urban areas. Perhaps you can just maybe give us an example of that.
I'm talking about the applications for bed and breakfast.
Okay.
Mm.
To what is it to be registered with men?
To register as a bed and breakfast holder or register.
Is it the zone? Maybe it's the zoning.
Well, I don't know whether they apply to MAT, whether they apply to the city, or whether they apply to province.
Because they must apply.
So we need clarity.
Okay. That's probably when they have to have their property rezoned for, and that's done via the city, I think, through them, the local municipalities. Perhaps we just need to find out. Yeah, when we can follow up for you. Otherwise, the department does. What we're trying to do now, especially around tour operate licenses, we have been receiving a lot of complaints from the industry because there's a huge backlog from the licensing board. And in our subcommittee that deals with participation, we have invited the registrar from the licensing board to come and inform the stakeholders about the backlog and how we can ask the department maybe can assist to a certain extent. So that's the only issue where I know there's a huge blockage, and perhaps us as a department can play a facilitating role. There was a concern also about the reach to the rural areas and whether the programs in the rural areas are what's going on. You said what's going on in the rural areas. I also want to assure the members here that whatever we do, we ensure that, you know, our programs go to the rural areas. I mentioned one program called Access the Cape. We have recently worked with a small community in the Central Karoo called Lewekhamka. So we try and reach out, especially for community or social tourism projects, because that is where that's my subdirectorate. We try and identify those small communities and try and create awareness on tourism, about there. I think also the ITVF also has identified infrastructure that needs development in as many rural areas as possible. I think that brings us to all the questions that we asked. You wanted to know whether we have a follow-up with the agencies. Like I said, with the Red Door, which has got, which we have a closer relationship with, they are part of a forum of national structures where your Umsobomvu Youth Funds and your CEDAS are represented. So you have people from our department that sit at those structures. And that would also bring like concerns from the province, if there's any blockages. So yes, there is a relationship that we've developed, and also there would be follow-up. In our building, the DTI also is on the first floor. So if there's any issues, you know, somebody just runs from your floor and quickly go to the DTI and speak to somebody. If you know you need to speak to at least DTI. So yes, there is follow up, and however, we all know that they all have your Umsobomvu funds, they've got their own challenges. But yeah. Thank you.
Thanks very much. It's good to get such presentations, because from here we'll also visit certain areas as a community, and then we don't have to inform you, and we have to compare apples with apples and what you got. Thanks very much. We'll excuse you all the from the Western case. We still have Mpumalanga. I agree with this note. whoever leads, one of them. You can be excused. You also have to go. You come from different provinces. She is one speaking on behalf of Kimba. Now that's okay, Honorable. I trust that you're going with Honorable Van Linge is work related.
Yes, no.
Okay.
Can I just?
Yeah.
Is it necessary that they must make all these copies? Can't they just give us electronic copies?
We can start with the presentation. Okay. That's okay. We did say, Honorable Chan, we'll report to you this evening. Can continue. Okay. Now, with due respect to time, we'll try in your presentation because you had to present first, but I was told the documents weren't ready. So I had to allow you time so that the documents are available. But we have to, and you see quite a number of honorable members are engaged somewhere. So you'll just be taking your presentation and we'll ask those. And we do a follow-up when you come to Mpumalanga.
Thank you, Thank you, Chairperson, members of the committee. Before I start, just to indicate that, as you can see, I'm here by myself, and necessarily I should be having my whole team here, but there was, I think, a miscommunication. The Mbombela host city was not able to come. I think maybe there wasn't a clear communication in terms of what was expected, or they did not receive it in time, that they were supposed to be here. And I'm the chief director responsible for trade and industry. In Mpumalanga, you may be aware, I'm not sure, that tourism was moved and taken to the agency, which is MTPA. And with that, there was, I don't know if I should call it a mistake, or but there was a problem where all the functions got to be moved to the agency. And now that causes a problem in terms of the government involvement, in terms of tourism. And you find that even those functions that should have been driven by government are now there with the agency. But that as it may, we are in the process of trying to get back those functions back to the department. And we've since appointed a director of tourism. Unfortunately, he's not here with me. It would have probably made a difference if she was here. The CEO of the agency, which is driving everything at the moment, is not here. There is a provincial Lekhotla today, and I think maybe that is the reason he was not able to come. We couldn't get a delegate from the Mpumalanga Tourism and Parks Agency, and as a result, I'm the only person who's here to do the presentation. Managed to get the presentation this morning, which I'm going to do to you, but I'm hoping that you will not ask all the difficult questions, because the people really who are on the ground, even though I do play an oversight as the person responsible for trade and industry, but the people who actually deal with tourism are not here. So I wanted to just, you know, request that you understand that up front. I'm going to sue the...
Excuse me, just hold on. Is this your understanding, Honorable Nyambi, or Mpumalanga, the setup?
Yeah, the setup is, as she explained it. But I'm struggling to come to terms with the really that are we going to be able to deal with what we are supposed to get, because we have a chief director from trade and industry, and you might find that our expectation is not what is going to be presented because she is alone and the others are not here. So I was of the view that based on the information given to us, so that we can be able to do justice to this thing, to make an arrangement, we have the entire team coming here, as it was the case with Western Cape, so that we can be able to engage and assist wherever possible. But the sooner we organize that, the better. Because we might find her in a tight corner and not assisting on what we are supposed to get. That's my submission, Jefferson. I strongly feel that if we can have the entire team coming, including the seat in Bombela, because it's relevant for this thing, and most of the questions will be based on that. We want to understand what's happening on the ground, what are the challenges, so that we can be able to assist. So that is why I'm making submission, Jefferson, that of course, maybe we can take it now and share whatever that you might want to understand, but... I don't think we have the entire team that can assist us with information. Thanks.
Honorable Khoshi.
I agree with Honorable Nyambi. Also that she said they are no more running all these things. Would like to know how close are they to 2010. She won't have the answer. Thank you.
Honourable
Sir. Thank you, Chair. I think I fully support the idea. I think if we are holding Chief Director of in charge of the training industry to briefing us on this, which is, I think, a little bit unfair. And I think if that's the case, we might just go through all the presentation by ourselves. Then wait for the next team, you know, when the whole team are available, then we can interact with each other.
Honorable Freddy.
Thank you. It's a pity, Chair. And I think we need to accept the apology of the Chief Director. But, I mean, she's playing an oversight role, and it's no fault of her. Even if we report this to say that it's no fault of her, but it's the fault of, I think, Mpumalanga, Tourism and Park Agency. They were the people that are supposed to be here, and they've neglected in their duty. I think we should, from your side as chairperson, write a strong letter, whether it's to the MEC or to the Premier, to say that Mpumalanga Tourism and Park Agency has failed this committee. I think the Chief Director can come back on trade and industry under your leadership, also calls it. Because the main culprits, Chair, are Bombela. Because they drive, in actual fact, they are, as Cape Town, the gateway to tourism in Mpumalanga. And with what's happening there, we want to find out, because we believe there's problems in Bombela itself. So we want to know how and what is happening there. They are the main culprits that were supposed to appear here. And they are not here, you know. So, Chair, I would really say that it's no fault on the Chief Director or blemish on her record or that, but I think we're going to do justice to this committee. And I agree with the previous colleague, Chair.
The colleague.
Sorry, Chair. I agree with the colleague that previously spoke, not the previous colleague.
thanks. You know, the honorable members have spoken. They all speak in one voice. And at least we also, that is why I asked Honorable Nyambi, because he comes from Mpumalanga. He would give us, because he represents Mpumalanga. And he has got to, you know, be certain that things are done properly. Now, when the colleagues are speaking, I'm asking, hey, next time we call the DTI, you will also come. So it won't be fair. But we would want to appreciate your effort in coming. And we understand it's not your fault. We really want to deal with the people that really deal with this issue. This would help us. I'm not sure whether you have your trade and industry things also here, which would have helped us. But we want to do some work on people that really deal with the work. So based on that, we'll be compelled then to suspend this system. We'll write a letter, get a proper date. More especially, the taking away your functions of tourism. You wouldn't be able to present and advance those reasons at the same time. You couldn't be. Would want you have helped us with that. We might also call in an MEC to explain why, so that we could speedily, it would be in line with the government. Trade and industry and tourism is just in one department, so that we could speedily deal with those things. Because we still have questions on them. Why was this happening? Why in Asia? Because that's abrogating your functions, you know, as a department. Unfortunately, but also take our apologies, which means we won't be able to continue until such time then that we are ready to talk to that Mpumalanga department. And for record purposes, we are still to introduce ourselves.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Joyce Phakade. I think I did introduce myself earlier. Yeah, but I thank you for your consideration, and hopefully I'll be able to come back next time with all the various people, maybe the CEO of MTPA, the 2010 office, which is based in the Premier's office, and the Mbombela host city. Yeah, I think that should help if we can get those three under the roof when we do the discussion. Thank you very much.
Okay, honorable members, the meeting now is adjourned until further notice.
If they don't come, we'll subpoena them.
Hey, we don't stop in the
now.
Inside you.